Radio Prague News.
A district court judge has ruled that Social Democrat politician David Rath, charged with corruption, as well as seven other people arrested along with him, will remain in custody. Some 500 police officers are working to ensure security during the Israeli Prime Minister's Prague visit on Thursday, and a record auction of a Frankische Kupka painting has revealed shortcomings in the country's registration of works that fall under the national heritage. A district court judge for Uski nad Labem has ruled that regional governor David Rath, charged with corruption, will remain in custody. On Thursday, the judge also remanded in custody seven other persons who were arrested along with Governor Rath. The court on Wednesday said there was danger that if released ahead of trial, Mr. Rath could influence witnesses, attempt to escape, or continue in criminal activities. Similar reasons were cited for the other suspects to remain in custody. On Monday, police arrested the former central Bohemian governor as well as four men and three women, among them Katarzyna Pancova, the head of Kladno Hospital, and two entrepreneurs, one of them from the construction sector. The group is charged with corruption, damaging the EU's financial interests, and manipulation of public tenders. Some 500 police officers are working to ensure the security of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who is in Prague on Thursday afternoon for an official visit. The Israeli leader, who is traveling with a delegation of seven ministers, will be meeting with his Czech counterpart Petr Nečas, as well as several members of the Czech cabinet during his two-day stay in Prague. Senior police officials have said that the Israeli leader's visit carries a higher security risk compared to those of other statesmen. The Israeli delegation is said to discuss bilateral relations as well as collaboration in the areas of education and research. The record auction of Frankische Kupka's painting The Shape of Blue has revealed shortcomings in the country's registration of works that fall under the national heritage, especially in the area of fine arts. To date, the Czech state has failed to determine whether the painting, which was sold to a foreign buyer for a record 55.75 million crowns, falls under the national heritage or not, the Czech news agency ČTK writes, citing insider sources. Should this be the case, the buyer would not be able to take the painting out of the Czech Republic. The National Heritage Institute claims that Kupka's work does fall under the national heritage. However, the seller of the painting maintains that it does not, since the process of proclaiming it as part of the national heritage had not been completed by the time the painting went on sale. And now for a brief look at the weather. Over the next few days, the weather should get milder with cloudy skies and daytime highs between 14 and 20 degrees Celsius. My name is Sarah Barufka, and this brings us to the end of the news.
You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's program, the Czech Constitutional Court has upheld the government's tax on solar power. And we look at an EU-funded childcare project aimed at helping families with young children juggle work and home. Plus, a little later in Panorama, you can hear an interview with one of the performers at this year's American Spring Festival. That's all ahead. The Czech Constitutional Court has upheld the government's tax on solar power, introduced retroactively last year in an effort to cool the solar boom in the country. Photovoltaic firms have complained the tax damages their business, while foreign investors into the business are threatening to initiate international arbitrations against the country. But the court said their interests cannot be superimposed over those of Czech citizens. Jan Richter has the details.
The Czech Republic introduced the 26% solar tax in January 2011 to put a brake on the rapid development of the photovoltaic industry. Generous state incentives, along with falling prices of solar panels and other equipment, made the investors' profits soar at the expense of the end customers, who eventually cover the cost of the support. The tax on the buying price of power applies to solar plants with a capacity higher than 30 kilowatts that were connected to the grid before the 31st of December 2010. The tax came under fire from solar plant owners who complained it would damage their investments and, in effect, ruin those who took out loans to build their plants. A group of senators then filed a petition to the Constitutional Court asking for the tax to be cancelled as it infringed the investors' property rights. But the court upheld the tax, arguing it was not approved in breach of the Constitution. Justice Ivana Janu oversaw the case at the court.
Nobody has a right guaranteeing that the law cannot change. Law is a set of rules regulating the life of a society that aims to balance the interests of the whole and those of the individual. I believe that in this case, those affected have no particular reason to complain.
But owners of solar plants complained a change of the rules in the middle of the game will seriously affect their businesses. Zuzana Musilová is the head of the Czech Photovoltaic Association.
For the investors, the impact is that because they have already taken their long-term credit and so on the base of the promised feed-in tariff, which was guaranteed by the previous law, the impact is that after this diminution of the feed-in tariff, they are not able to pay for the credit.
However, the court said the investors were indeed aware that the prices of solar collectors were falling and could therefore expect a change in the state policy of support for solar power. The impact on their investments has not changed and their returnability remains 15 years, while the impact on the profits is not relevant. Justice Ivana Janu again.
We wanted to make sure that none of the entrepreneurs suffer any serious losses, particularly those who took out credit, because those who did not have been making nice profits since the very start. We wanted to avoid a direct impact on their investments.
Foreign solar firms are already preparing to launch international arbitration against the state for failing to protect their investments in the country, while local companies will have to sue the state individually in the Czech Republic.
Jan Richter reporting. This month saw the launching of a new EU-funded childcare project aimed at helping families with young children juggle work and home. In view of the lack of day nurseries and kindergartens around the country, the Brno Center for Family Planning and Childcare has launched a rent-a-granny scheme along the lines of the Oma Dienst project successfully implemented in neighboring Austria. Daniela Lazarova has the details.
Prokupku, ahoj! Pojď za mnou! No pojď za mnou! No pojď! No jo! Ahoj!
Ahoj!
Irena Mala is more than just a babysitter. She is a replacement grandparent who now looks after two young boys several days a week. The boys' parents were one of the first to respond to the rent-a-granny scheme launched by the Brno Center. Gabriela Vibiralova, one of the project's organizers, says the name of the project, Clover, denotes a bond between three generations, seniors, young parents and children.
We launched the Clover project only this month, and the idea behind it was to help moms who do not have grandparents to help them out to return to work once their maternity leave ends. Many worry about leaving their children with babysitters, but what we offer is highly personal childcare by someone motivated by family contact rather than financial gain. There are many retired women who have free time on their hands and find great fulfillment in this. We select our grannies carefully and try to match them to the right families in terms of location and interests. What we insist on is regular contact, at least once a week, in order to support the process of emotional bonding between granny and the kids.
Irena Mala, who is retired with grown children of her own and no grandchildren to fill her time, says she is very happy in her new role.
Mládnu s nimi dětmi a je to velice příjemné. Je to
These kids keep me young, and spending time with them is most enjoyable. We chat, we play games, go to the playground, buy ice cream, the kind of things you would do with your own grandchildren. I have plenty of other interests and hobbies, but this is something more. It is enjoyable and a useful way of spending my free time.
Rented grannies are mainly there for the children. They should not be expected to clean house or cook. They have no specific certifications, but they all have childcare experience and some have formal training. They're ready to offer love, support and protection and are in fact very much what a biological granny would be. The set rate is a minimum of 50 crowns per hour, though there are no objections to reaching an individual agreement. I asked Gabriela Vibiralova how much interest the scheme had generated so far.
Well, after the media attention the project received in the past few days, we have been bombarded by calls from around the country. We are filling all offers and requests, though we had expected to expand more slowly from our home base in Brno, Moravia. We are already struggling to meet demand. We have 50 grannies and 90 families who want to rent one.
That was Gabriela Vibiralova, one of the organizers of the Rent a Granny scheme. And I have to say, as a parent myself, well, it's a great idea. I really think that that kind of thing goes a long way in helping young families. If you have an opinion about the project or anything else that you've heard so far in today's program, don't forget to write to us here at Radio Prague. It's easy. The address is english@radio.cz on the internet, or our street address, which is seeing not nearly as much use as in the old days, Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. But with summer coming, perhaps we'll get a postcard or two. So do write to us or take part in some of the discussion on Facebook or Twitter, where Radio Prague, of course, is also present. Now, though, we turn to today's main feature, which is another edition of Panorama with Daniela Lazareva. She'll be talking to one of the performers at the ongoing American Spring Festival.
American pianist Stephen Boyce is one of the star performers at the American Spring Music Festival currently underway in the Czech Republic. The internationally acclaimed musician, who performs with renowned orchestras and gives solo recitals the world over, has been described as a strikingly original, confident and gifted player with a rock-solid technique. On what is his second recital tour in the Czech Republic, he visited Radio Prague studio and talked about the joy he derives from music, the inspiration he draws from it, and the secret behind his ability to captivate an audience.
The inspiration I find is in the music, really. It's the genius of Beethoven. It's a genius of Bach, of Mozart, that inspires me. Studying this music and spending time with it, living with this music is such an incredible honor. It's so inspiring. There's so much to learn from it. And even a piece that I've played for many years, that I've studied, that I've memorized, I know every note of it. Still, there are more things that you discover. This music is greater than any single performance of it. And the more I play it, the more I study it, the more I learn. And it's fascinating for me. And I think as long as it holds my fascination, I think I'm able to express that somehow to an audience.
Do you connect images in your mind to different compositions?
Sometimes. It can be easy when you're thinking about technique just to worry about, you know, hitting all of the notes. But after that's sort of become comfortable, I do like thinking about sort of light and darkness and how they relate to emotions and how that sort of is incorporated in the music and how these black and white notes on a page turn into this, you know, brilliant array of colors, or how they can turn into that. Absolutely.
Who are your favorite composers? Are there pieces that immediately strike a chord, and are there pieces that you find it more difficult to relate to And in that case, how do you go about mastering them? Do you try to find out how they were composed, when they were composed, in what circumstances, what country?
Mm-hmm. That's a difficult question. I have to say, in terms of my favorite pieces or favorite composers, it does depend on the day, depends on what I had for breakfast, depends on the weather. There's so much amazing music that it's hard to choose just one. But I do love Bach, I love Beethoven, I love Mozart, I love Chopin, I love Rachmaninoff. Scriabin is one of my passions. There's an American composer, Charles Griffiths, whose music I love. But, I mean, like you said, occasionally I am asked to play a piece that maybe I don't love. Sometimes, I mean, an orchestra may ask me to play a specific piece, for example. And it can be a challenge sometimes to be interested in a certain piece of music. But I find that if it's you know, relatively good music, you can find something interesting in it. I mean, why did the composer write it? Why was it interesting to him? Why is it interesting to somebody else? And sometimes you just have to pretend that you like it in an extreme situation. And there have been a few times where I've had to go on stage pretending that I like a piece. And I don't like doing that. And I don't often do that. But occasionally it is necessary.
What about Czech composers? Do you play any?
I played Janáček Concertino with the Hamburg Symphony a few years back. And that was actually a piece that the first time I heard it, I was confused. And I didn't understand what was happening. I did some reading about it, and actually it was a really fascinating piece of music. It was depicting different forest animals. One of them was a squirrel, and all of a sudden these odd little musical patterns made sense when you took it in context of what Janáček was trying to express of depicting these forest animals. And then it was actually a lot of fun. There's a great deal of humor and witty interplay between the different instruments, and I ended up enjoying that piece very much.
Your technique is incredible. How much hard work is behind that perfect technique? Because obviously it's not just emotions. You know, I've not heard you put a note wrong. So how long do you practice for, and how much hard work is actually behind it so that it's just note perfect?
Well, that's very generous. I would not call it perfect. But there is a great deal of work, certainly, that goes into getting the notes. And it's a constant thing. And it changes with pianos, because some pianos respond in very different ways. And I can do something, I mean, as well as I want to on a certain piano, but then I go, you know, to a piano with a stiffer action. And it's like the difference between running on a paved sidewalk and then running on sand. And you have to change your approach to it. And so part of it is learning to be comfortable with different instruments, and that can be very challenging.
But how many hours a day do you spend at the piano? How many do you practice?
When I was a teenager, I was very consistent. I practiced 5 hours a day, 6 days a week, and I did not miss. These days, when I'm traveling, I have a family, I have a wife and two kids, I don't practice as regularly as I used to. And I don't think I need to in the same way that I did when I was a teenager. But I like to do, you know, 4 or 5 hours on a serious day. But when I need to take a break, I will go several days without playing. And I think that is sometimes the most useful time that I spend as a musician.
You can go for several days. I was going to ask, how long can you go for before your fingers start itching for the piano? Do you mm-hmm. just need it now to live the piano?
Well, I do. I do actually need it. And when I say I'm not practicing, I'm still playing, but not the music that I'm currently practicing. Maybe I'll find some music that I've never looked at before, or some music that I've been, you know, dying to look at, and maybe spend 20 minutes with it. Or sometimes I'll take my little boys on my lap and let them play, and we'll play silly little duets together. So the days when I'm not practicing, I'm still playing, certainly.
You started at the age of 5, I believe. Mm-hmm. That's awfully early for a child to, you know, to actually be disciplined enough for drills and hours of practice. Did you always know that this is what you wanted to do?
I don't remember a time when I didn't want to be a pianist. I think I always wanted to be a pianist. I mean, I started lessons when I was 5, but I started playing the piano actually when I was 2 years old.
How did that come about so early?
My mother taught piano. She taught piano in our home, and so we had small children coming to our house, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, playing these little children's pieces. And when I was 2 years old, I would go to the piano and I would start playing some of these very simple little things on the piano. And looking back on my life, I think the most unusual thing that I can see is that I was so interested in it, that I wanted it. Not that I was, you know, the most amazing 2-year-old pianist that's ever lived. That's certainly not the case. But the fact that I wanted to as a 2-year-old. I mean, I have a 2-year-old son now, and I don't think he feels that way about the piano. I mean, he likes coming and, you know, banging on the piano like any 2-year-old. But when I was 2, I went and I wanted to play these little pieces, and I played them by ear, and I liked it, and I've always liked it. And my parents never forced me to play the piano. I have 7 siblings, and my parents didn't have enough attention to, you know, force one of their children to do anything. And so I did this because I wanted to, and I do it because I love it.
Many classical music performers try to bring the genre to the masses, so to speak. Is that your goal as well? Do you try to do that?
Well, I think it is important that as classical musicians, we're aware of our audiences and aware of where the future audiences will be. And I don't know how things are in this country so much, but in the United States, certainly, classical music audiences tend to be older. And it's difficult sometimes to get the younger people interested in classical music. And not because the music is, you know, dull or uninteresting, but because they're not familiar with it. And it's not part of the education, at least in my country, as much. And that's a serious problem. But I do find that when you know, people of my generation in my country, when they hear this music and when I have a chance to explain something about the pieces, that, I mean, they respond. And I mean, not everyone loves it and not everyone has to love it, and that's fine, but there certainly is so much about this music that is thrilling and that is fun and that is, I mean, everything that you want from music.
At the age of 26, is it? You seem to have the world at your feet. You're widely acclaimed internationally. Are there any unachieved goals? What are your plans for the future? And you know, what are you still reaching for?
Well, musically, I want to be a better musician. I mean, I think about my friends who love sports, and you know, the great athletes when they're in their mid-20s or early 30s, usually that's sort of the peak time for them. And by the time they're 40, you know, they're not playing maybe quite as well, more injuries and things like this. And when they're 50, I mean, they're not playing basketball anymore, or at least not professionally. But in music, I mean, I'm still very young. I mean, the great Russian virtuoso Horowitz, he was playing into his 80s, and he was playing very well. He never played better, I don't think. In some ways, maybe he was more agile when he was, you know, in his 30s. But in his 80s, he was magnificent. And so I still consider myself sort of an infant musically. I have so much more to learn. On a more personal level, I mean, I mentioned my family and my wife and my kids, and somehow this is such a meaningful part of life, such sort of all of life to me. And I think that life's only going to get better.
When you speak about being a better musician, if you have a piece that technically is perfect, what can you improve upon? Is it emotions that you can, you know, do you feel that with time you can understand a piece better? Or what would make a piece better after you feel that, yes, this is how it should be played and I've got it now?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I don't really believe in sort of the perfect interpretation or
of a single piece,
right? Of a single
obviously
piece.
But what, you know, how, mm-hmm. if you say a better musician, it, mm-hmm. where can you grow, or you know, where can you expand, or is it that you would mature emotionally and make the piece feel different, or you know?
Sure, I think that's definitely part of it. Also, listening better to what you're doing, making more interconnections in the music. How, I mean, even sort of the articulation, how connected are the notes, how separate, how does your right hand and your left hand interact, how does a melody interact with the accompaniment. And these things can be done in so many different ways. And, I mean, also different pianos, different acoustics. It's always sort of exploring. It's sort of an act of creation every time you play a piece. And, I mean, music, it shouldn't necessarily be the same every time. There should be a sense of spontaneity, improvisation, and creation every time. So I think always exploring and finding new ways and different ways to bring the music to life.
The American pianist Stephen Boyce was Daniela Lazareva's guest in this week's edition of Panorama. Now, if you'd like to go back and listen again, or if you'd like to look up some of our older stories on the internet, that, of course, is easy as pie to do. The address is radio.cz. You'll find an interview there, for example, with one of the other performers at this year's American Spring Festival that we spoke to, the soprano Melanie Gall of Canada. So if you're interested in that festival or wish you had a chance to visit, you can find more information at our website, radio.cz. I'm afraid, though, that that's just about it for today's program. We are, once again, out of time. I'm Jan Vellinger for all of us here at the station. Thanks so much for joining us, and take care.